If money affects your life in any way, Money Making Sense will talk about it. Be financially healthy, wealthy, and wise. Here's your host, Heather Kelly.
Welcome to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. Today, we're going to talk about Sundance, but not the films themselves. We're going to talk about how cities and towns are financially dependent on the Sundance Film Festival coming every year, which kind of isn't happening this year. Joining me today is Billy Holden. He is the vice president of SAG-AFTRA for Utah. So welcome back to the show, Billy.
Thank you, Heather. Thanks for having me back.
So this is a huge economic boon, the Sundance Film Festival, for the state of Utah in and of itself. But if we dive down a little bit further, the reason it is a big boon is because you've got a bunch of tourists coming in. They, you know, eat at restaurants. They do the hotels, all of that. But I want to talk about the people who own those restaurants, especially if it's a mom and pop place or a really small establishment. They're dependent on a majority of their income for the entire year for the 2 weeks that the Sundance Film Festival happens.
That's absolutely correct.
And this year, Sundance is it went down from 2 weeks, it's more like 15 days, I think, 15, 16 days to 1 week to 7 days. So they reduce their time and everything is virtual now. They're not having people come in and out of Park City, Utah, where the Sundance Film Festival is.
Absolutely. And I was at the last Sundance. And of course, after attending, I saw some articles saying that was Sundance the petri dish of COVID for the U.S.? It's an interesting concept of what's happening a year later that Sundance is going completely virtual.
Yeah. And when we talk, for those who don't understand the area that the Sundance Film Festival takes place, the main drag in Park City, it's one street. It's called Main Street, and it's about six blocks long. And everybody, studios move in there, reporters from all over the world. Plus, you have the producers and people wanting to show their films. They take over pretty much every single building and small shop that's available for those 2 weeks, and they rent it out. They pay the owners a pretty penny to do that for the 2 weeks.
Absolutely. What you say, I'll give you one example. But last year, Lyft, the shared transport company, they rented out a shop and got the entire building. They painted it pink, put in all their own furnishings and all, you know, like a ski lift and that their open bar and had all their VIP parties. And it's all for advertising the Lyft brand. And they paid the owners of that building more money for 2 weeks there than they generate in the entire year.
Wow.
Okay. And just about any property owner or leasor of a property will sublease their property out for someone to take it over for their venue.
Yeah. And then we're also talking about, I have friends who, it was many years ago, so they got in before the prices went sky high up in Park City, but they got a pretty nice condo and they live in it except for those 2 weeks every year, but they make 5 months of their mortgage in just that 2 week period renting out there.
Exactly. That's been a business model for a number of years for people going up and buying condos or houses. Especially the houses that are near Main Street, a lot of them have been torn down and built as two- and three-story buildings.
First of all, they've been barely eking it out this entire year during the pandemic. If it's a restaurant, they haven't been able to stay open for several months. And then when they finally did open, you could only have a limited amount of people inside. So they were like, all we have to do is get through to January to when the Sundance Film Festival starts. And now nobody's coming.
Correct. Which is literally an economic disaster for Park City.
Have you talked to any people or owners up there? Like, what are they doing to survive?
Well, the ones that actually own their property, they're going to be okay. The ones who have extravagant mortgages or they're leasing your property, they're going to be feeling the pinch.
How much money overall do you think that Sundance Film Festival brings in to Park City and or the state of Utah each year?
You know, I couldn't put a monetary value on that. I think a good choice would be ask the Utah Film Commission. They probably would have more accurate numbers of how much tourism dollars is coming in and what kind of revenues is being generated by the Sundance Film Festival. I can guarantee you it's in probably $100 million.
Wow.
And that's not just Park City, because in the last several years, they've run out of space in Park City, so they've actually had to move a lot of events down to Salt Lake.
Yeah, and in Ogden. So I remember about maybe 10 years ago, they started showing the first films down in Salt Lake City. And I thought, oh, nice, because I live in Salt Lake. And I thought, oh, I won't have to drive up to Park City on a snowy day through the canyons to do that. So I watched a couple of those down here. And then I think 2 or 3 years ago, all of a sudden, I started seeing the advertisements for films in Ogden as well. So since Sundance was already branching out to different cities, and this year is just, you know, pretty much virtual, do you think they're going to change things up for next year and maybe not even be in Park City?
At this point in time, with the pandemic going, it's anybody's guess at what will happen in the future. I think that people will rethink their business models of what they're going to do with Park City properties.
And it was always, again, I know not all my listeners know the setup in Park City, but the roadways are set up for one car each direction, smaller cars, and then you get these big buses with all the tourists and the people trying to get from movie theater to movie theater and all the different venues that happen. And you can sit on a bus that is normally a 10-minute drive from one place to another for an hour and a half and barely move.
Yes. Well, the road infrastructure is not designed for how big Sundance has gotten to over all these years. I mean, when Sundance started, originally, it was a small film festival, and Park City can handle it just fine. But even the last couple of years, you have to park in a parking lot further down by the junction and then take a shuttle bus up to Main Street, unless you are a resident there or renting a place or have a rented parking spot.
Yeah. So all of those add to, I mean, the congestion and the problems, I think that would have led some of the city officials to maybe invest money into improving roads and widening them if that was at all possible. But now with no film festival coming in, there isn't like the extra money coming in to maybe pay for it.
Correct. But there is a side note here. If you want to visit Park City, this might be a great time to do it because not many people up there.
That is true. All right. We do need to take a break. When we come back, we will go on to how Sundance is the first one this year to kick off and what happens with all the other film festivals throughout the year. So we'll be right back with Billy Holden. He is the VP of SAG-AFTRA Utah.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show that if it affects your life in any way, we're talking about it. And today, what's sort of affecting my life is the Sundance Film Festival that's coming up in just a couple of weeks. Joining me today is Billy Holden. He is the VP of SAG-AFTRA for Utah. And in the last segment, we talked about how with the Sundance Film Festival this year being all virtual, it is really affecting the economy of not just Park City, where it takes place, but also the entire state of Utah. But moving forward, Billy, we've got other pretty big film festivals coming up around the country and the world. And last year, almost all of those were canceled because of the pandemic. Do you think they're going to look to how Sundance doing virtual this year is how they will do their film festivals?
Well, I think all the film festivals are going to have a very sharp eye on how Sundance is doing their virtual program. And I think that if they do it successfully, that we will see the other film festivals mimic what they've done.
So what would make Sundance a success at this point?
Well, literally, it's going to come down to the quality of product that's been selected to be nominated for various awards, and then who wins those various awards at Sundance. So previously, a lot of it was corporately run, and the method of engagement, it was a buyer's market for the product. And if you're an award-winning product at Sundance, you most likely would have a distributor who's going to make you an offer on your film. Now it's going to be literally coming down to artistic value and creativity, et cetera. And it's, I don't think it's going to be so much of a buyer's market.
Isn't that what the festival originally was designed to be, was more artistic, and it was for the artists that couldn't get in with the big Hollywood machine that happens, but Sundance somewhere along the way sort of became part of that Hollywood scene?
You're absolutely correct. Originally, Robert Redford's original vision was for this to be for the outlet for independent filmmakers to be able to show and release their artistic and creative product.
And that's what we think we're going to move back to this year?
That's what I could see happening, you know, because we're not going to see the influence of the big corporate name, especially with Netflix and Amazon and Hulu and Disney, and then all the sponsorships from all the big banks and other corporates that are doing VIP parties. That was half of what also Nest is about, is the networking and the VIP parties, which also led to how they met the actors or directors, and they sold products. And Sony Pictures and Netflix, Apple TV and Amazon, all of them would go in there and buy a product that was an award-winning product. Don't see that happening as much this time around. I think it's going to be back to core original value.
Yeah, and I'm going to miss out on all the swag.
Yes.
I was amazed. I had no idea. This will be my fifth year reporting on Sundance, and every year I just come away with more and more and more stuff that they give you every time you walk into some event.
Absolutely, and that's part of the appeal to go to it. You're going to come back with swag, and of course, and there's the merchandising as well. How much merchandise does people buy from Sundance? I remember last year I bought scarves and hats, T-shirts, and I would assume those sales are going to be reduced compared to previous years.
I'm assuming that Sundance has an online website where you can buy that stuff.
They do, but again, are people really going to buy that swag for something they didn't actually go attend?
Oh, that's true. It's kind of like I went online and all you bought me was this lousy T-shirt.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take one more break. When we come back, we'll wrap everything up and talk a little bit more about the possible other film festivals that we have coming up. So we'll be right back with Billy Holden, the Vice President of SAG-AFTRA for Utah. Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. Today we are talking about the Sundance Film Festival and how that's affecting the economy of Utah, but also on a personal level. We have a lot of shopkeepers, small business owners that depended pretty much 90% or more on their entire revenue for the year for the 2 weeks that Sundance usually is here for the film festival. And this year, they're going virtual and it will only be for a week. And so nobody's really here in person doing that. Joining me today is Billy Holden. He is the vice president of SAG-AFTRA for Utah. And Billy, we have covered Sundance Film Festival. This isn't happening just in Utah. There are dozens of other film festivals across the U.S.
Absolutely. There's Telluride, Southwest by Southwest, and Palm Springs, and there's multiple L.A. film festivals, and then we have the Toronto Film Festival, and then literally every country has a film festival around the world, so this is a global thing, not just a U.S. thing.
Yeah, and I know Telluride is set up fairly similarly to Park City, where the Sundance Film Festival happens, so they, too, very small town, and they depend almost exclusively on getting their festival in for a huge amount of their income. Now, they do have a larger ski resort than this Park City one or Deer Valley, I believe, so they do maybe get a few more skiers in there, but it's very similarly set up to Park City.
It is. In the Telluride Film Festival, Ashley is run how Sundance was intended. So it doesn't have the big corporate flash as Sundance has become.
Ooh, so this is going to hurt them even more.
Correct.
Wow. In your capacity in the SAG-AFTRA world, what are you hearing about how people are dealing with not having their film or not having huge audiences coming to see their films at these festivals?
Well, everything's actually gone virtual. Due to the pandemic, streaming media revenue shot up 200%.
Streaming revenue went up 200%?
Correct, because you have a captive audience, thumbs on sofas.
So the movie industry in and of itself it hasn't actually been that hurt.
I'll give you a union. We've seen voiceover artists, our broadcasters excel during the pandemic. And one of the reasons is Netflix was very quick to maneuver their foreign exotic product through voiceover artists in English and put it on their huge platforms around the world. Now, we still have a huge demand for product and new product because people are consuming the product and streaming media so fast that we can't get product up fast enough.
Yeah, but there's thousands upon thousands of choices still that have been on these streaming services for a while. I can't imagine that every single product has been devoured yet.
For those people who are at home, quarantined, have lost their job, 24/7, sleepless, can't sleep at night, all watching streaming media on any of the various platforms.
All right. So maybe our film festivals of the future may all go to streaming anyway. So maybe there won't be these big crowds anymore.
I anticipate that's going to be the new norm, at least for the next 24 months.
Ooh. So that means 2 more years of virtual Sundance Film Festival?
If you look at the rate of vaccination in the United States, there's your answer.
Wow. So that means 2022 and 2023, Sundance Film Festival has a good possibility of still being virtual, and we wouldn't see crowds again until 2024.
Most likely.
If they decide to go back to that model.
That's probably a question to be asked to the directors of Sundance.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, we'll get on them next. All right. Billy Holden, thank you so much for talking to us about the Sundance Film Festival and the economic issues surrounding pretty much all the film festivals this year and how they've been affected during the pandemic. And not just them, but the small business owners who rely on these festivals to help them out throughout the year. So thank you so much, Billy Holden. You are the vice president of SAG-AFTRA for Utah.
Thank you, Heather.
Thanks for listening. You can email me with any questions or topics you want to hear about at hkelly@ksl.com. That's hkelly@ksl.com. And because this is Money Making Sense, you can subscribe for free on Spotify, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast, and you'll never miss another episode.
Thanks for being a Money Making Sense listener. Follow your common sense on the social media, Money Making Sense, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.